Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up C-Red podcast. It's officially free agent week. We started our free agency show last week with barely some rumors floating around with no signings happening yet. This show, this latest edition of the Rise Up C-Red podcast, we are going deep into free agency with the Arizona Cardinals, their re-signings and everything. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the USA Today sports media group, NFL Wire site, covering the Arizona Cardinals. My co-host is Seth Cox, RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals website. And Seth is not in the blizzardy cold of Chicago right now because he chose a good week to return home. How is everything, Seth?
It's good, Jess. It's warm outside. My allergies are just eat me alive, but other than that, I'm not in 10 inches of snow, so I can't complain too much.
And we've got over here, and it's spring break week for those of you who have kids. So kids are home, the citrus blossoms smell wonderful, or they're torturing you if you've got allergies. So one way or the other, it's hitting 90 degrees here in Arizona, so things are heating up, not only in the weather, but also in the NFL world, as the Arizona Cardinals have been. I'm not sure how we can describe how the Arizona Cardinals have been with free agency, because that's what we're going to be talking about tonight. The Cardinals have re-signed a few players. They've lost lots of players, and they've signed a few others with a particular trend that we're looking at. We're going to run through each of those. We're going to go deep. We're going to go down into, each and every move that they've made. We're going to talk about the re-signings, the guys that they've come back, how they fit, are the deals good or not. We're going to talk about who they've lost and how much they've lost, and then what they're going to do about that. And then the few gains that they've gotten, what and kind of the positions we think still might be addressed, and kind of what the outlook of the offseason is now, because we're kind of getting a picture of what's happening with the Cardinals for the 2017 season. So let's go ahead and get started. That'll be what we're going to start with here on Rise Up C-Red, the Rise Up C-Red podcast. This is episode 152. We're going to talk about specifically, we're going to start with re-signing. So that's next up. Here on Rise Up C, we're going to be talking about the re-signings that the Cardinals did. And we'll kind of go through that. Now some of them we already knew. We knew about Chandler Jones' deal last week, but some of the contract numbers are in. 5 years, $82.5 million, $15 million signing bonus, and really only $22 million guaranteed. His $7 million salary for 2017 is guaranteed. And then after that, his salary goes up, and it actually declines over the last two seasons. We already discussed the fact that the Cardinals kind of got a deal. But now that we have the guaranteed money and the signing bonus and the cap hit, are you more or less pleased with that deal?
I think you're pleased with the deal. I wrote about it last week when just, the initial figures came out and you and I discussed it. If he produces, and I'm not even saying, if he produces 15 sacks a season, if he produces where he's been in his career averages, it's going to be a steal. I mean, that's just what it's going to be, because the cost right now is so absurdly high for pass rushers. So you get a deal that's less than Olivier Vernon for a guy that's produced double. I think you have to be happy, with that return, and that's the way you kind of focus on it and enjoy what he's going to bring. We'll see now, obviously, if he continues to produce. All contracts look bad if guys don't produce following them.
Well, and in terms of the cap, I mean, this year is very reasonable. It's $10 million against the cap this year. It goes up to $15.5 million in 2018, but 2019, that's the biggest part. We get to $19.5 million against the cap. However, it's in 2019 you can start thinking about, is it worth keeping him around if he's not producing? At that point, it would still be $9 million in dead money. So they would save they would say, you know, if it weren't working out after 2 years, they could save $10.5 million against the cap and cut him loose. And then after that, you know, year four and year five, the cap savings are significant, but still some dead money there. They'd save $13 million in 2020 if they needed to cut him loose, and then $15.5 million in 2021 with $3 million dead money. So I like how the deal is structured, and based on his age, you're in a situation where if you start seeing the production dive, you can still save significant money after 2 years. And you have to figure that providing he's healthy, you're going to get consistent production at least out of those 2 years, and likely three, until, you know, he gets into that, to the 30s. And then after that, you kind of say, okay, we're going to go from there. Some pass rushers we know can kind of blossom and bloom into their prime at right about the age right now where Chandler Jones is, and then continue to be consistent after that. And others we've seen where the production just, you know, it's like they fell off a table and it's gone. I love the way this contract is structured, and I'm actually kind of pleased, really surprisingly pleased at the way most of these contracts have been set up this offseason.
Yeah, outside of it's not a bad contract by any means, and I think it just comes off when I question it. But like the Jermaine Gresham contract, that's the only one I had a problem with because of the fact that Martellus Bennett got less money and is better at what Jermaine Gresham is getting paid to do in Arizona. Now, again, if the Cardinals focus more on Gresham and utilize him up to his ability, this isn't questioning his ability, this is just stating if they utilize him in that way, then I think it'll be worth it. The problem's going to be Arians hasn't utilized a tight end since Indy. So year five? So 6 years ago, six seasons ago? So it's going to be one of those if you're not going to use a guy to be more than a, you know, run blocker, extended blocking guy, why are you investing that much money? That's all.
And here are the numbers for the Gresham contract. 4 years, $28 million, so it's an average of $7 million per year. He got $7 million up front in a signing bonus, $16.5 million total guaranteed. And it goes like this. So he got $7 million up front. His salary this year is fully guaranteed at $2 million. His $5.25 million in 2018 is guaranteed for injury only. And then after that, I believe it comes down to, it's just after that, I think it's his, the one thing I don't know about the structure, he's got $750,000 in roster bonuses, which is, it comes out to $15,625 per game active. That covers three seasons. I don't know if that's good, if it's years one, two, and three of the deal, or it's two, three, four. I'm supposing it's years one, two, and three. You know, say what you want. I'm under the, you know, people saying, oh, can't believe the Cardinals paid more for Jermaine Gresham than the Packers did for Martellus Bennett. And I see this a couple of different ways. Well, one, Jermaine Gresham's 2 years younger. Martellus Bennett's already at age 30. And in terms of the per-year average, it's the same. He got 3 years, $21 million. Gresham got 4 years, $28 million. And then, obviously, the guaranteed money was less for Bennett. However, what's really fully guaranteed is only year one, and year two is only guaranteed for, is really only guaranteed for injury. But the way the contract is structured, and it's a smart thing for what the Cardinals did. Basically, he's locked into 2 years. It protects him essentially up through age 30, which is not a bad thing to do. They keep him, and he gets, because if he gets cut year two, it's almost a wash in terms of what would be the salary cap. It's almost worth nothing to cut him in year two. After that, because of the $7 million over 4 years, You know, you've got some dead money in year three and year four, but the cap savings are still there, and you still cut him loose after age 30, or he produces beyond that. And so I think a couple of things happened there. While Bennett is considered the better player, Jermaine Gresham at 2 years younger has the, we've seen big production from him before. He fits this offense really well. And more importantly, we've heard just how much the Cardinals love Gresham. And if we're looking at it from the sidelines and thinking, well, if the football people are saying that he is really, really, really good, and they're not just, you know, that's just not blowing smoke. They legitimately believe that he is really good. I don't have a problem with the deal because it isn't, it's not a bad deal, in my opinion. It's not a bad deal. It's, is it more that it, does it surprise people across the league that it was a better deal than Bennett? And maybe it should, but I think the age and familiarity in the office, because had the Cardinals done the exact same deal that the Packers did for Bennett, I don't think they get the same type of production, even though Bennett is the better receiver and better blocker by all accounts, because, you know, he hasn't been in the office as long. And you see how long it took for Gresham to get integrated. It took him nearly a season and a half to be integrated into the office. On top of that, Gresham already did the Cardinals a favor by coming back on a real team friendly deal, the $3.5 million last year, and turning down. They rewarded him for gambling on himself and coming back to the team, because he turned down, what was it, 4 years, $23 million with $12 million guaranteed a year ago, and he cashed that in for a little bit more money. And I think there's something to that as well. So it was part reward, part potential, and part just the fact that they really loved him and his age. He's in the prime of his career.
Yeah, and like, it's not the worst. Like I said, it's not the worst contract. It's more of a bad contract based on use, and that's what the issue is and becomes for me. Not necessarily the player or anything of that nature.
But then again,
other contracts.
What else are you going to do with that position? Because they have garbage.
And maybe the problem was that they didn't know, or they don't have faith that they can draft O.J. Howard at 13, and then there wasn't another guy. Maybe they don't like Njoku or Ingram enough to take them at 13. They don't think they'll be there at 45. So that's the other thing, is you always want to get guys on good deals and that can help your team. The question really becomes, like I said, is this going to be a good contract, or is this going to look bad because he's going to average, you know, 35 catches and 350 yards and 2 touchdowns this season? And you're going to go, well, why are you paying this guy that much money? And again, nothing against Jermaine Gresham at all, right? But you have to wonder what the point is of that. So, the other contracts, I mean, outside of, they really apparently wanted somebody they can trust in Phil Dawson, I don't think there's anything that you can possibly say negative about any of the other contracts, because they're all either short term or the money so low that it doesn't make a difference.
Pretty much. In terms of the other Cardinals who have returned, we already talked about Jeremy Ross returning. We already knew about Josh Morrow returning. I mean, we got the big news of John Wetzel getting, you know, the qualifying tender. Zach Dysart re-signed. But here are, you know, if you look at who else came back, A.Q. Shipley, that's the one that we learned about as well. It really was what I expected it to be, a 2 year deal. I figured it would be between 3 and 4 million. He got 2 years, $3.5 million. It rewards him, and it's not going to crush them if in year two he ends up being a backup.
And I think that's what they want, is for him to be here 2 years and end up being a backup, right? They would
ideally after this year,
they would like to have a Evan Bain type win, or you know, something of that nature. So
and the interesting thing is, we're going to talk about this, is that, you know, A.Q. Shipley, who was essentially the Cardinals' best lineman all season, most consistent lineman all season, gets 2 years, $3.5 million, while Earl Watford, who really did not establish himself in terms of starter worthy, at least on the Cardinals, you know, he gets 2 years, $6 million. And I get, in part, that's because of Youth Shipley. What, I think he's 31 already. He's been in the league for a while. Athletically, he's not. I mean, Watford's much more athletic, is younger with some more potential. But that's the one thing I was like, wow, Shipley, even now, after the Cardinals, after he proved to the Cardinals that he could play, he proved to the league that he could play, he's still, in terms of the money, he's still a little bit disrespected in terms of what you look at, because he still looks like a guy. He's being paid like a guy they're waiting to replace.
And that's what it is, though, is it not?
It's exactly what it is.
So all of it makes sense. All of it is, you know, it's just – I don't think they've given out – like I said
– Lost you.
Can you hear me again?
Yes.
All right. I guess my computer went to sleep.
Oh.
The only – and it's not – like I said, not a bad contract. The only bad contract would be – Gresham's, and I don't even agree with that analysis that it's a bad contract. So I don't see any way that you are unhappy with what they've done. I do understand why people are saying, huh? You know, like all this stuff, all these moves, all these losses of players, and this is what they've done.
Yeah, this has basically been, this offseason has been an interesting one so far for Cardinals fans, because going into this past season with big expectations and having it fall flat, I think they were, even though there were salary cap limitations, I'm pretty sure the kind of the pulse of Cardinals fans is they were expecting a splash or two outside, like landing a safety to replace Tony Jefferson, like a name out there, or landing a receiver who could be a number two or a guard, and nothing's happened yet. So it's kind of been, well, okay. And we're going to talk about that later in the show in terms of what it looks like, what this means for the Cardinals as they move forward. But it's interesting. We've got one other re-signing. And that came out on Tuesday, and that's the news of – well, actually came out Monday. It was the news that Andre Ellington, perhaps the surprise of the offseason, re-signed with the Cardinals to a one-year deal. We talked about one thing. I specifically mentioned one thing, the only reason why he'd come back, and we're going to talk about it in just a second. But as a running back, did you ever see a scenario in which Ellington would be back? Because in terms of what he looked like last year, he looked like he was, I mean, there's nothing else to say than he was terrible last year.
And that's one of those, you and I kind of talked about it before the show. And that's one of those things that this sounds awful, but it's not. I feel like Kime was unprepared for the way the season played out. And what I mean by that is they assumed they were going to lose Calais Campbell, Tony Jefferson, maybe Kevin Minter, these players that were in key roles. They assumed they were going to lose those players if everything went well. So another NFC Championship run, maybe the next Super Bowl run, something of that nature. They did not assume that they would go 7-8-1 and still lose all of the same players. So now, I think what happened with Andre Ellington, the combo of the bad season for the Cardinals, the combo of the bad season for Andre Ellington, I really do think the thought process was, oh, if this happened, you know, we'll be able to sign Kevin Minter to a one-year deal. We'll be able to get Tony Jefferson for $5, $6 million a year, because they're all coming off poor seasons where a lot of, you know, bad happened and we went 7-8-1 or 7-9 or 6-10 or whatever. I don't think they foresaw the bad overall season as a team combining with the great individual seasons that happened. So the Andre Ellington thing actually ends up making sense, because I think personally you have, that's what you're expecting or hoping you were going to get for more players. And that just ended up not happening outside of, like, you know, Andre Ellington.
Now, in terms of what his role is going to be the next season, it's exactly what, you know, without tooting my horn too much, as we observed late last season, Ellington became basically useless as a running back. In a conversation I had with the media member here locally, you know, the concern is every time he gets anywhere near a defensive player, does he, you know, bury himself in a foxhole to avoid contact? You know, because he went from being dynamic to not even looking good in space, and like he was looking for contact somewhere and just avoiding it. Now, they taught him to do this his second year after he was coming off, you know, they taught him that. And there was, I can't remember if it was 2014 or 2015, going into training camp. And he talked about how they talked to him about being smart. And we saw beginning that year, he was still effective. You would see him go down quickly in certain situations, which is understandable with his stature. He took it to a completely different level, to where he was looking to go down the second there was a player around him. And so this is the role that they have for him this next year. And I think it should fix things. And I think last year's problem might have been compounded by a few things. They had him returning kicks. They had him returning punts, and he was terrible. And we talked about I've never really wanted to openly criticize or to root against a certain thing happening, but when Andre Ellington returning kicks was a thing that should have never happened, and I never wanted to see ever again. His long was 25 yards, and that long return took them to the 23-yard line because he returned a kick he never should have brought out of the end zone. Or it was like from the 21. It was ridiculous. And then he'd never done punts before, yet his coach says he's a natural punt catcher, and he looked uncomfortable out there. You could tell he did not feel comfortable doing that. So I think last year was a combination of a lot of things. He lost reps as a running back. He was asked to do other things he wasn't comfortable doing, and it all kind of compounded. But 2017, and I saw this coming late in the year, said, Andre Ellington might come back, but not as a running back. He's going to come back as a receiver, and they're going to try and kind of rehabilitate his playmaking ability as a guy in the slot. Lo and behold, Kent Summers tweets out on Tuesday that the Cardinals intend on using him primarily at receiver. He might get a few carries here and there just because he's still a running back technically, but I think we're going to see him as the offensive Daylon Buchanan. Daylon Buchanan, who is a safety by name and number, but a linebacker in every other sense of the imagination in reality. And Andre Ellington's going to be a running back by number and by label, but will basically be a receiver. And if he can, you know, that might be exactly what he needs, because he can be dynamic. And that's, in fact, his rookie year, Carson Palmer wished that Ellington would be a receiver full time. And maybe I wish perhaps it would have happened before now, but this might fix things for him.
Well, not just that it might fix things for him, but it gives him a unique ability to kind of redefine himself as a player, because he hasn't been the guy that we expected him to be after his first season at running back. He, you know, we've seen flashes of it in 14 and 15. We really saw nothing in 16, but most of that was due to lack of opportunity. And so now he's going to have a chance to redefine himself. If he works out well, or if the Cardinals, you have to assume they're going to re-sign sign him, right? Like, Fitz goes, they bring back Ellington, plus a potential new.
Because in terms of receiver skills, based on his build and his speed, he's a Bruce Arians receiver, right?
Yeah, exactly. So that's what you're looking for. Outside of he's not overly fast, but you know he's not like a 4-3 guy, but he's a guy that can move well in space and do some different things. And so, you know, you look at it though, and I think with Ellington, the whole thing becomes simply that you have a guy now that works best in space. He's always been a great receiver. And now you just want to, you know, see how many touches you get him again. He can only be a guy that gets 2 or 3 touches or receptions a game, right? Like, he's not going to get more than that, barring an injury to Fitzgerald or somebody else.
Probably not.
Not coming back healthy. But, I mean, especially with the new emphasis that we're going to get on Jermaine Gresham, right?
True. Well, maybe they're gonna put 40 points a game, and they're gonna have receptions for everybody. And Carson Palmer's gonna throw the ball 60 times every game, and because they're gonna run 90 offensive plays, David Johnson's gonna carry it 30 times, and Carson Palmer's gonna throw it 60, right?
Right, exactly. That's what's gonna happen.
Yeah. So that wraps up the players that have re-signed. Coming up next on Rise of Sea Red, we're gonna talk about their losses, the seemingly significant losses. That's next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on Rise Up Sea Red. Now we're going to talk about the losses. The Cardinals have lost, it seems like they lost everybody. And if you look at it, they kind of have. So this is the list. This is the list of the guys that they've lost. Now, it's important to note, several of these players, they did not intend on re-signing. So starting at the top of the big names, Calais Campbell signs with the Jacksonville Jaguars, 4 years, $60 million. Can't fault him for taking that deal. Tony Jefferson, 4 years, $36 million with the Baltimore Ravens. DJ Swearinger gets 3 years, $13.5 million. Marcus Cooper gets 3 years, $60 million. They have no intention on bringing back Chandler Catanzaro. He signs a 1-year deal with the New York Jets. They have no intention of bringing back Earl Watford. He signs a 2-year deal for $6 million with the he joins Campbell at the Jacksonville Jaguars. They lose Darren Fells, a player that by all accounts was not retained. He signs a 1-year, $1.5 million deal with the Detroit Lions. And then Alex Okafor, a player they did want to bring back, signed a 1-year, $3 million contract with the New Orleans Saints on Tuesday. Still up in the air, and it looks like he will not be returning, is Kevin Minter. Kevin Minter is a guy they wanted to upgrade from. He visited the Colts on Tuesday, is headed to Cincinnati on Wednesday. So he will be signing. And so they're going to end up with, what's it, 1, 2, 3. They will have lost 5 defensive starters this offseason. Their kicker, their primary bench pass rusher, and their most versatile offensive lineman. Are there any of those players that you think were a surprise that they ended up leaving?
None, really. I mean, I was honestly surprised they wanted Okafor back as bad as it seemed like they did. I don't know, though. Catanzaro, we assumed that he was going to have competition. It made sense that they didn't tender him, correct?
Right.
But I am shocked at how much they're paying Dawson. So,
well, and that's the thing. I was surprised because I thought they wanted him. Apparently, they didn't want him back. That's what it was.
But again,
they just said, "Okay, we're we're done with that.
That goes back to the whole thing that you never can ever believe what Bruce Arians says, right? Like, ever. You can never trust him. You can never believe
him. And that's true. Because there was – I got the vibe that – go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, he talked ad nauseum about the reality or the idea that they trusted Catanzaro, that, you know, he was going to be back next year. Well, like, I don't know.
And I got that vibe too. You know, he said how talented, and I think he was being genuine. But then there were a few things that he said about how the season went, you know, how we missed kicks. And you know, and there's point, if there's things that we can point to that we can fix, we'll get rid of those guys. And I kept thinking, right. Well, that's got to be it. Catanzaro's not going to be back unless they brought a guy. But and we're going to talk about the addition of Dawson. He was a type of player, a caliber of kicker that you don't bring in to push because he's established. If you're going to sign him, you're going to sign him. He's going to be your kicker. We'll talk about that more in a little bit. For me, you know, the only thing that you might see as a concern is because we knew Calais Campbell was gonna, there was no way the Cardinals could pay him. With the salary cap restrictions, there was no way they could have paid him.
We can't be surprised about Tony Jefferson either because you and I have written about it, so this isn't like, oh, we had sources, inside information, anything like that. We knew that they were offering him $6 million. Like, they had offered him $6 million. Every bit of information we have gathered, and we're not out hunting down sources or looking for information. We're just, you know, we gather it as it comes into us, and every bit of information we got was that he was going to get at least $8 million. And the Cardinals did not want
to pay him that. Well, and they couldn't. And they really couldn't because of the money they've already got tied up in Patrick Peterson and Tyrann Mathieu. And simply put, for the production that they're going to get out of that position, it doesn't make any sense. And so, and when they looked at the beginning, what was it? They had Chandler Jones's deal was in the books. They had, what was it, $17 million or so in cap space. The two of them, based on their two deals, is $16 million. They just couldn't do it. They would have had to have done minimum contracts for every single other player. They could not have signed a single other impact player had they brought the two of them back. So neither one of them leaving is a surprise, and nor can you fault the Cardinals because they offered Calais Campbell the Michael Bennett deal.
Yeah, they offered him $331 million. But again, we knew from everything we've heard and written about that was never going to be enough. That number wasn't enough. So it was going
to come. They'd have to give up a lot of money to come back. And that's what the team was this year.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's fine if you're coming off back-to-back NFC Championship game losses or you're coming off an NFC Championship game loss and a Super Bowl loss. A Super Bowl win or a bad season, we're seeing what happens. Either guys go and get I shouldn't say it either. If you lose or if you win the Super Bowl or you're on a bad team record-wise, people go get paid because now the question is how close are you? Can you, you know, all of that stuff. So it makes sense that it happened the way it did because why would these guys – believe if they just came back to the same team for less money that they were going to be any closer than they were this last season.
Exactly. And, you know, the two that you might be disappointed at are the fact now DJ Swearinger got mixed reports on those. There was more than one person saying the Cardinals had no intention on bringing Swearinger back, concerns of fit in the locker room, you know, personality type thing. But then, with the news of Tony Jefferson going to be getting this monster deal, there were also reports that they were going to focus on him. So his leaving is not a surprise since, by some accounts, the Cardinals were not interested in having him return. And it makes sense because I know we both want a Swearinger back, but that was a classic sell high.
Right. But I also think it made sense because they thought – they were going to put most of their focus on Jefferson, which seemed odd for whatever reason. But, you know, everybody else knew that his financial or what he was going to get paid, apparently, except the Cardinals. And then it seemed like almost last minute they came back to Swearinger, right, as opposed to the opposite way. So then why would he feel like he should do it? I don't know.
Yeah, and that's a, you know, especially with the focus on chemistry and smart players. Swearinger played really well, and we both liked his versatility and the production on the field. Was that a guy that you could count on to be a leader and to do well moving forward? Who knows? Marcus Cooper was a guy they wanted back, but it became evident that he was going to cost too much. Now, he ended up getting what – it wasn't crazy money. We've seen this before. He got 3 years, $16 million, so just a hair over $5 million a year. $1 million a year is not crazy money for a cornerback, although he basically had 1 year of – he had one decent year, and then his rookie year was okay as well. We've seen, you know, if you're a starting caliber cornerback and you're young and you have size, you're going to get $5 million a year. Justin Bethel, they gave him $5 million a year. Greg Toler back in 2013, he got nearly $5 million a year, and that was 2013. So, which leads us to the question. They wanted him back. Either they don't believe enough in him to commit those 3 years or that $16 million, or they're happy with the cornerbacks that they have. And that's an interesting thing because they're in the exact situation they were a season ago, only they have Brandon Williams now as opposed to just drafting him in April. To say that they're comfortable with what their cornerback position is now is kind of odd.
Well, and I think we're going to see if they really are, right? Like, if they draft a corner high, then they're not. If they take a corner on day two or three, then it can be argued that that's just going with, you know, the best option or the best player at that point in time. But if they take a cornerback at 13, you have to assume that, again, Bruce Arians and Steve Keim were lying and they were just kind of holding their cards close to their vest and didn't want anybody to know that they were looking, looking at the corners and interested in finding a corner.
Kevin Minter's going to be out the door, which is, you know, I'm surprised that they're just, well, we know why they were decided to move on because they brought in a guy in, but I'm surprised that they didn't leave him as an option. Especially since a guy, and there was an interview that on Easy Cardinals that Lisa Matthews, one of their staff there, did with Larry Foote. Larry Foote, Kevin Minter, he's, you know, not super athletic, but he's smart. He's tireless in his work. And I'm surprised they didn't think about bringing him back.
But I mean, all of that said, doesn't that say to what they think of him as a player?
Pretty much.
And that's the hard part for me is Dansby at 35 really that much better than Kevin Minter? Or maybe it's the 1 year of Dansby and being able to bring in a Hassan Reddick at 13 or maybe they get a Jared Davis at 45, you know, or a or another, like a Duke Riley in the third round. Maybe that's why they're comfortable with what they did, because they're at the same comfort level, or they think that there's no fall off between a 35-year-old Dansby and 28-year-old Kevin Minter, but they don't want to invest because they think that they can get a better player or a more upside player in the draft to replace them, which is what I think is happening with a lot of the moves they're making.
Exactly. And that brings us to the part where of the players that they've lost. I don't think there's really anything we need to say about Earl Watford. They clearly didn't think he was the option to start at guard, since he had every opportunity to start at guard and was inconsistent at best. There's potential there, and I'm glad for Earl because he's a good kid. In terms of his value to the Cardinals, it was clear that he never really was an option. So it really, I mean, the players that they lost aren't, for the most part, no surprise. But it just seems, and I think what we have to do is we talk about in just a little bit of the players that they've brought in. It's the imbalance between the players that have replaced them and the loss that they've had, especially when we, you look at this. This was a top 10 defense statistically. Now, what that means, I'm not quite sure. We've had this debate before. was it a farce of a top 10, or was it a top 10 that just was, they were a good defense that was close to being great, or were they really, was it fake? They were statistically a really good defense, and they've lost half their starters.
Right, but I think the plan was for some of this to happen. I think they had in place this idea that if we're good and we do well, then we can sell it that, we need to make these changes. I don't think that they assumed it was going to be the issues that they had, and then they were going to have to make all these changes too, right? I think that's where the disconnect is. But you have to, at some point, have the kids play, and that's what great teams do, is that they end up bringing in their rookies, and they end up bringing in their young players, and then eventually they become, special maybe too strong a word, but they end up becoming really good, right? So that's what you end up watching in this whole thing. So I think that's where the Cardinals kind of are, but the transition wasn't smooth like they expected it to be.
Exactly. We'll go over to the final segment on Rise of Seed Red next. Coming up next on the final segment is we're going to talk about the players that they have signed, where they fit, and then we're going to talk about as well what might still be to come towards free agency. So that's coming next on Rise of Seed Red. The final part of Rise of Seed Red, we're going to talk about the players that they have, in fact, added. And we're noticing a trend. And the trend is old, experienced. Now, we could go with just the word old, or we could go heady, leaders, experienced, productive, reliable, as that's been kind of that's the trend with the Cardinals. So who are the guys that they've added? They've added safety Antoine Bethea, formerly of the San Francisco 49ers, 3 years, $11 million deal. However, in terms of impact long-term, he'll be a cheap contract 1 year. Unload him after 1 year without any big deal, and especially after 2 years. They brought in a familiar face. Carlos Dansby returns. And remember when I joked about that last week? He actually came. 1 year, $2 million. He becomes the starter at inside linebacker alongside with Jim Buchanan. They bring in kicker Phil Dawson. They commit more money than we thought that the Cardinals were willing to do. They pay him 2 years, $6 million, $1.5 million guaranteed. Basically saying, okay, you're our kicker. And then the new signing would be the signing on Tuesday. He had former first-round pick for the Pittsburgh Steelers. He now becomes the Cardinals' Alex Okafor, their third outside linebacker or their third edge rusher in the rotation. He replaces Okafor. He signs a one-year incentive lading, which could be worth as much as $3 million. The Antoine Bethea signing for me was, that's the one I had. I didn't see it coming at all. But the trend that I see, especially with the three other signings, I like the approach. I like the approach of the Cardinals that they're addressing positions of need, but they're not necessarily committing long term when they don't know what the future beyond this year has. And the problems that the Cardinals had were mental issues, you know, character issues or chemistry issues. They've brought in high character, high football IQ veterans who not only are veterans, but are consistent and have been playing at a high level for a long time. Antoine Bethea, I think, is a solid pickup. And as we know about the safety position for the Cardinals, you know, even though they were in a bad spot, losing both Jefferson and Swearinger, safety's a position that...
I missed something. Oh, no. It's just canceled the season.
So, but the safety position is one that's fairly replaceable. You know, that's not a position Steve Keim said. That's not one of those positions you want to spend a lot of money on because you can find safeties. And based on what we've seen outside of Jefferson and Swearinger over the years, the league does not value Arizona safeties because they produce seemingly because of scheme.
Right, and I think it also goes back to what we kind of talked about a little earlier, is that then it doesn't restrict them at any position in the draft.
If they want a safety.
If they want a safety at 13, and they take a safety at 13 because Bethea can coach him up basically this year, help him out, and then – whether it's half the season or after the season, and then you get a transition, and then you have a cheap safety veteran on contract for when Tyvon Branch leaves. So it's a no-brainer. It's the same thing I just said about Dansby with all the linebackers. So you just kind of look at what they did, and a lot of it was placeholders. And that's not a bad thing. It was getting guys that can produce at the same level, or as you said, that safety spot seems to be where you can just kind of plug a player in.
And he's going to get 90 tackles.
Right. And well, not just 90 tackles, but he's going to produce at a higher level than most players do. And so for those years, you're going to be okay. You're going to be in a good spot, and you're just not going to – you're not going to worry about it. I've said all along, I think the only loss that hurts this team in the immediate is Calais Campbell.
And they're prepared at that position because if they can replace his production, and they don't even have to be dominant. They just need to be solid. And now, granted, we haven't seen it yet, but they talk about Gunter, they talk about Kimdichie, they even talk about Xavier Williams as their teammates talk about him as monsters. So they are players who could be potentially on the cusp of breaking out as really good players. We don't know. That's the only thing, is that that's where you have the unknown. At safety, you know you're going to be fine. You think you're going to be fine. After all, you know, when it was Rashad Johnson back there, and he's smart. I mean, they got the job done. They had a top defense then. You know, they bring back Tyvon Branch, or they don't cut him. And so now you're okay with depth because you've got three safeties that you know can play in Matthew and Bethea and Branch. And then you bring in a young player, or you have a Trevon Hartfield develop, or a Harlan Miller who can play, you know, and they got production from them too. So it's really good. Now, Dansby, this is a perfect example of a player we never should have let go. And we talked about this years ago. They should have cut ties with Darrell Washington and signed him to the deal because the production that he continues to put up is really uncanny. I mean, last year he wasn't even a starter, and he still had 114 tackles. Kevin Minter had, 95 or 96. Dansby still moves extremely well. He's really smart, and so you're not going to lose anything in production, and the value that he will have for Dan Buchanan, you know, remember what we saw in 2013 with Dansby in Washington? There's that potential to some degree this year with Dansby and Dayone.
Yeah, and you just need that production front, and that's where, you know, I think the loss of Calais could hurt the most, is that you need production up front from guys to allow those players, because you got to remember those guys were playing behind Dan Williams, who maybe was the best nose tackle in the NFL at that time when he was at that point, and so those guys got a lot of free runs on downs to get to their assignments and get in those lanes. So now the question is, can Corey Peters produce that way? Do they, can Gunter, can DJ, if they bring Frosty Rucker back, Josh Morrow, can all of those guys help to give them that same freedom and ability to kind of, be creative in their playmaking?
And, then Phil Dawson, the addition of Dawson, I think does wonders. I mean, he's 42 years old, but in terms of a kicker, he doesn't really miss. He's incredibly clutch. What the stat that G. Philly, when he was on the radio the other day, cited is that 4 years, that in the final, in basically clutch pressure situation, the final 5 minutes of ball games in which the game was in within a touchdown, he's 91%. 91%! And that is where the big difference between he and Chandler Catanzaro, because they both had this basically the same, I think it was the exact same kicking percentage for field goals over the last three seasons. The difference is that Catanzaro, you don't know what you're going to get from him in the clutch. Now, he's hit clutch kicks, but last year you doubt him. It became a point where you doubted him, and you'd see him kick the big one, make the big kicks, because he did it in Seattle. So you're like, he can do it. He did it against Cincinnati the year before. So he can do it, but you can't always count on Dawson. You can. There's some question whether he can do kickoffs or not. I'm not totally concerned about that. And the way he talked about it in his introductory press conference made me feel less concerned. One, he can place the ball. Two, anytime he was asked to kick a touchback, he could. And the Cardinals have two punters on the roster who are also able to have big kickoff legs in Richie Leone and Matt Wild. They both can do it.
Yeah, and the Dawson thing makes sense, because they need somebody that the team has faith in, that they have faith in, that can produce at the end of games, when the game's on the line. Dawson's kind of been there, done that his whole career. And like you said, he brings another veteran presence into the locker room. So now all of a sudden, you wonder how much that – I mean, Butler wasn't a young guy, but he was relatively young. So you wonder how much having a young long snapper, a youngish punter and a young kicker kind of worked against them and what they were doing.
So. And Catanzaro's best year was – the one where you felt the most confident in him was when he had a Dave Zastidel in the locker room. And Dave Zastidel, long-standing veteran. And then, 2015, 2016, you go through 2015, you had Mike Leach as a long snapper. But then last year you went from experienced to inexperienced, because even Drew Butler wasn't experienced in the league. I mean, he played, Cameron Candidate, fresh, he was green, and Catanzaro's still young, and so they bring in Brewer, who's experienced, but now they bring in a guy in that special teams room who is the leader. He's the leader of that group. He knows how to prepare. He knows how he's going to tell the guys, let's do it this way. And I after hearing him talk, I'm excited about that signing, because he's legitimately excited to be here.
And he's a guy like I said, you can trust him. He's been there. He's been successful. He's kicked in pressure situations. It was kind of a no-brainer. I think it was a little more than we expected them to spend on a kicker. But you and I talked about it in the previous show. If they wanted that confidence, if they wanted, everything if they wanted a veteran, they were going to have to pay more. And we talked about, I mean, Dawson was one of those guys we brought up. We brought up Robbie Gould. We brought up one more. I think we said Greg Zuerlein. I mean, you look at that, and, you know, all those guys got paid around the same amount. So it makes sense.
Yeah, and then the one signing which happened on Tuesday was the one that isn't necessarily the one that makes the most sense. He replaces Alex Okafor as Jarvis Jones. The first round bust of a pass rusher from the Pittsburgh Steelers in 4 seasons. He has 6 sacks, and he doesn't have the time off, like the injury. He doesn't have the injury excuse that Alex Okafor has. So he's an interesting addition because at least Okafor had your ideal size and frame and athleticism that you like. Jarvis Jones, we're looking back at the draft, he's lighter and less athletic than Marcus Golden. You know, as a third pass rusher, maybe that's not a bad thing. I don't see him as being really any sort of impactful addition. I know they intend him on playing special teams, but I'm not excited about the signing at all. And I just assume see Kareem Martin getting those reps.
I think it's one of those interesting signings where you get a guy to try and see if you can get something out of him after he kind of busted out somewhere else, and you get him on a cheap, you know, kind of prove it deal. I think that's what they're reaching for here. And, you know, we'll see if it works. It doesn't make sense because he's not the same type of player Alex Okafor is. So they're going to have to utilize him in different ways. Now, I think you'll see more Chandler Jones and Marcus Golden on the interior, right? Because I don't think you can put Jarvis Jones in there. So you got Chandler and Golden with hopefully Kimbiche at that point playing in that speed package. And if you bring Jones in for that speed package, he's got to work exclusively off the edge. I mean, I don't imagine that you're going to put a guy that's under 250 pounds. I think he's in the 240s still. I think you're going to put a guy in the 240s as a defensive tackle anymore.
Unless they have him as, I think they used, when they brought Okafor in the game, he was a stand-up inside rusher, kind of rushing from an inside linebacker spot. Unless they planned on using Jones in that sense, then maybe that makes a little more sense, but it does give him further to go. When you're not super fast, that's not necessarily the best way to go.
Exactly. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do and how they utilize him, because he's not the same type of player. And so that'll be it. That'll be what matters.
So looking ahead with what's left in free agency, what moves are left for the Cardinals to do? They don't really have, I mean, as of this morning, they had, according to the NFLPA, $18.8 million. And I think that included everyone, but now you bring in Jarvis's deal and that's going to eat up another probably million, although potential for $3 million, they've got basically $10 million to work with. And if you want to be safe, I believe $5 million to work with. There's two areas that are sort of red flag-ish to me. One is guard. It's interesting to me that they have made no effort publicly. There's been no reports. There's been zero effort to target a guard. And outside of bringing back Marcus Cooper, there's been no effort to bring back a cornerback. Now, cornerback is kind of an iffy position. I can see where they're going to be okay with Bethel and Brandon Williams. I've joked about the, hey guys, how you feel about Brandon Williams and Justin Bethel? Because I think that might ultimately what it be. Now, Jarrod Powers, Brandon Carr. If you're looking at the trend the Cardinals have gone, you're looking for a Mike Jenkins type signing. I don't think they bring Mike Jenkins back, though. I wouldn't rule it out completely because, well, what's been Mike Jenkins' knock? It's been his durability. And what did he do in the matter of 2 weeks? He broke his arm and tore his ACL. So he's the profile of the guy, a guy who's had success, a former Pro Bowler, who's got size and experience, but doesn't have to necessarily start. He's the guy that you'd want in there. Jarrod Powers could be in that mix, although if you know he can do an adequate job at starting, even on the outside. He's going to be smart. He's going to be heady. He's not ideal, but you could live with that. But a guard, that's the one area where I'm like, they're really not going to do anything. They're really gonna bank on Evan Bain playing well, because that's odd. As much as that, I like the potential of Bain even at guard. Is he really this year's DJ Humphreys at a different position?
Maybe. I don't know. I really don't. And it's interesting that they're doing it that way when he was a fourth round pick. It wasn't like it was an investment in a first round pick or even a day two pick. You know, it was a fourth round pick, sparingly used despite just a litany of injuries. You know, and then, but we saw on the other side, you know, his counterpart in Kandice, where, I mean, he was barely ever active, right? So I think they use it. I think they have different philosophies for different, you know, we'll see how it all kind of comes together here, but I'm surprised that there hasn't been more movement on the position. But then when you kind of look at the names out there and the money that was being thrown around, it kind of does make sense that they're waiting a little bit, right?
Right. And maybe there'll be, you know, the talk is about how they're trying to build up compensatory picks for next year. Maybe they wait till after that deadline, was it May 1st or whatever, where it doesn't matter anymore. You can sign whoever you want with no compensatory effect. But that's, I mean, the compensatory picks are nice, but wouldn't you rather have a player that can help you now instead of a year from now, maybe?
Well, and yeah, and those exactly. Picks are, that's a maybe, and those aren't really like, I hate the word third round compensatory pick because it's not really a third rounder. You know, it's more like a fourth rounder. And so you're going to get a fourth, a fifth, and a sixth, even though they're going to label them as a third, a fourth, and a fifth. Now, at least there are tradable assets. So if you want to go up, say they pick at 13 again next year, just because that's the number we have, and they want to go up to 9, you know, all of a sudden that third round compensatory pick is eligible to be traded. And so you can move that pick and go up as opposed to giving up your 3. Or you still have that third round pick again, you know, that third quotation mark round pick, and you can give up your third round pick, and you only drop maybe 20 spots instead of 32 spots. So there are some benefits to it if you're wanting to move. I just don't like the idea of losing all pro players and then being like, well, at least we're gonna pick 99 in the 2018 NFL draft to replace him.
Yeah. So, you know, we've got this Cardinals offseason. You can tell what they're trying to do is they believe they have a team who can win, but they're not trying to overpay to do it. So they're bringing in veterans who can hold and produce while they prepare the team for the next phase. Because if you look at this team in a season from now, we could be looking at a whole lot of departures with some, you know, your core players being, you know, Patrick Peterson, Tyrann Mathieu, you know, Chandler Jones, probably Daewon Buchanan. Then you've got the young guys on the defensive line. And then on offense, you got David Johnson. And yeah, it might be about it. You're going to be building your team around that. And, you know, this is probably
DJ and DJ on the offense, you're going to have.
And this David is probably the right approach because there is a lot of uncertainty following this year. So they don't bring in anybody to really commit beyond this year, which is it's not a bad strategy, especially if they do really believe that they were a few unfortunate events or mistakes away from being a contender, which you can argue it either way. You could say they just weren't good enough and they won't be good enough because they had overperformances in 2015. Or you could look at, hey, we turned our 2015, things went well for us. We had a few you know, a couple of missed kicks and a few mistakes, and we weren't good. But we fixed those correctable things. We're right back there. We're right back there into the postseason. So it's a good way to go about it, in my opinion. So, I mean, it's the smartest way for – it's really the smartest way the Cardinals could have handled this offseason, at least thus far. Two areas of concern are still definitely areas of concern at guard and cornerback.
Yeah, and I think you are still a little concerned at safety, too, because your depth is injury prone. So you have okay with Bethea there, but you probably want to get some blood in there. Even if you have a Harlan Miller as a guy that you want to make the jump, you still want more talent there. Marquis Christian and Matthias Farley being gone kind of really screwed that up.
Harold Jones Forte. There's a lot of safeties they've let go that are doing things.
And so now you're stuck. You know, you kind of. Don't get me wrong. I mean, Tyvon Branch and Tyrann Mathieu aren't bad to have, but it's not necessarily what you want to go into the season with. If your safety room is Harlan Miller, Antoine Bethea, Branch and Mathieu. So that, you know, all of those things will come into play. The draft is good at positions of need for the Cardinals outside of maybe quarterback. So that's going to be helpful because they can find a day two corner or safety. They can find a day two guard. They can find a day three safety. There are players to be had at positions of need that will fit what they need to do. And then they could probably supplement that with post-May 1 signings, as you just mentioned, to really kind of strengthen the team. You know, a Brandon Carr out of Dallas would make sense. And just finding players that fit into those roles.
And that'll wrap up this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, episode 152. We've talked free agency, and we'll be back again next week. I would imagine the plan is a show next week, take a week off, and then we're going to be talking about NFL draft, assuming there will still be free agency news to discuss next week. As you know, you can find us pretty much anywhere. If you're listening, you already found us. Share the word. You can find us on our websites at cardswire.com, on revengeofthebirds.com, also hosted on Blog Talk Radio. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter, @RiseUpCRed, on both of those. Also on iTunes. Subscribe. We'd love you to give us a 5-star rating. It'd be fantastic. Google Play, Stitcher Radio, and pretty much anywhere you can find fine podcasts. We'd like to think that we're one of them. On behalf of Rise Up Sea Red, I'm Jess Root from CardsWire.com, and that's Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com. That's another episode. We will be back next week to talk more free agency. Rise Up Sea Red. Go Cardinals.